Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see a Jew.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell. Mark Mother's Bathroom Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from County Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season 4. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with... It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button if you're not already. You're going to get new interviews just like this one sent your way every single week. You can grab us at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give the series a rating and leave a review wherever you're listening from. We've had some great guests drop by. Walter Scobell, you know him, maybe more as Percy Jackson in the latest Disney Plus series. He was just on here talking about the second season, setting us up for the third season. Documentarian Morgan Neville, he's the one behind 20 Feet from Stardom, Won't You Be My Neighbor, Anthony Bourdain Roadrunner. We got to talk about his latest with Netflix. It's called Breakdown 1975. We also caught up with Emmylou Harris, Lori Morgan, Ayanna Lee. You saw her in the Spike Lee movie, Highest to Lowest. Director Paul Feig dropped in to talk about The Housemaid, which he directed, starring Sydney Sweeney and Amanda Seyfried. The Runarounds on Prime Video, Darcy Carden. She popped up in the latest season of Loot on Apple TV. Juliana Hatfield to tell us about her 20th album, Lightning Might Strike. Lou Graham from Foreigner and the cast of Fraggle Rock. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, a special Rewind episode. Amy Mann, Grammy-winning songwriter, Razor Wit, alt-rock pedigree with Till Tuesday, knack for turning emotional wreckage into immaculate pop songs, almost won an Academy Award for Magnolia. Joe Henry, shape-shifting songwriter, producer, whose resume zigzags from art folk to soul, to film scores, redefining American music along the way. And Karen Berquist, the voice at the hearts of Over the Rhine, known for poetic, slow-burn songs that feel like late-night conversations you don't want to end. This is a special Rewind episode. I got to talk with all three of them. Not just talk. I got to spend an afternoon with the three of them, pretty much, I won't say trapped in a radio booth, because I was very happy to be there, feeling very, very lucky. And even as I look back on it, this is over 10 years ago, that's still a pretty good career high right there. And it was all because the three at that moment were deep into filming the Louisville shot movie, Pleased to Meet Me. The indie music film directed by Archie Borders, my friend Archie Borders. The movie would go on to be released in 2013. So in this conversation, we got to break down the strange thrill of musicians stepping into acting roles, how the movie's story about forced collaboration mirrored their real-life creative chaos, why chasing fame had already lost its appeal. And along the way, they got candid about the fear of embarrassing themselves, the freedom that came after the music industry's collapse, and why discovery, not reinvention or commercial validation, is the only thing showing up for. So let's all head back to 2012 as we talked about the movie Pleased to Meet Me. It's Kyle Meredith with Amy Mann, Joe Henry, and over the Rhines, Karen Berquist.
It's 91.9 WFPK Radio Louisville. Kyle Meredith, and this might be one of the greatest days in my life. Surrounded by amazing musicians, to the left of me, to the middle of me, to the right. Let's go to Joe Henry is in the studio, Amy Mann, and Karen Berquist. Do I say your name right? Because I always look at that.
You do.
Could start off with an apology.
It's an appropriate English pronouncement, which is fine.
Well, it is awesome to have you guys in here. Thank you so much for being here today.
We're delighted to be here.
Thank you so much.
You've all been in Louisville actually for, I don't know, what, a week, couple weeks?
Week and a half.
Yeah, about a week and a half. Yeah. Seems like a month. I don't mean it that
Things
way.
Things go really slow here. Yeah,
know.
Thanks.
It's purely because of the movie. We're doing such long hours. Yeah. It has that, you know, it's like tour time where a week becomes a month. Mm-hmm. But we're in love with this town.
Mm-hmm. That's what I like to hear.
It's unbelievable. It's a crazy little utopia. I'm just waiting for the bubble to be burst.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, keep it coming.
We're beyond thrilled with Louisville.
What you're talking about, you're out here shooting a movie, actually. This is a bit of a different element. I mean, there is history with movies and TV here, but you're shooting a movie called Pleased to Meet Me. With Archie Borders directing,
right?
Mm-hmm. This is based off This American Life episode, right? It's called Everybody Speaks Elton.
Mm-hmm. That was the original broadcast episode, yeah.
Yeah. So what's the story? Give us the dummy.
Okay, you looked at me when you said that. Give me the dummy interpretation. I think the shorthand story is that. A woman who's a producer enlists the help of her ex-partner, who's a, you know, regional rock star who didn't quite break through. And they have this concept together of an experiment where they put a band together of completely disparate characters, mm-hmm. you know, people who have no history together personally or musically, don't come from similar musical backgrounds, take them into the studio for a single day. And have to come out with a recorded song, so it's just sort of a, you know, what can we do with this?
Sure,
you know, in this window of time, if we all sort of, you know, serve the same goal,
and it can fail miserably,
wildly.
I was promised by Archie that this would not fail miserably; that this was going to make all of us look, you know.
Well, I did mean the songwriting, but just the same. So, how did you all get involved then? How did everybody arrive in this?
Because Joe Henry.
He's
the hub around which this whole
when Joe says
wheel
do
turns.
This, you do it.
Yeah,
and
no. Can't say no to Joe. Yeah.
It's very hard. We've tried. I just tried it about 15 minutes ago, and it was really hard.
That was Will. You come into the radio station, right? Thanks, Joe.
Well, again, the short version of that story is that. My brother David lives in your lovely city, and he's a writer. And Archie enlisted his help to work on the screenplay. And they approached me about, for one, doing some music production for the film. And at first had asked me if I would take the lead role of the film, which I wouldn't do. I didn't think I could do it. I didn't believe I could be that character. I didn't think I was that character. But I still wanted to be involved, and I thought that the smartest way for me to be involved was to stack the deck with, you know, my friends and loved ones, and then, you know, and then I could, you know, be like a big net that I could jump into. So, based on my wife's suggestion, I threw out John Doe's name mm-hmm. to play the lead, and Amy as his counterpart, the female lead in the film. And then, once they were in place, it was easy to kind of see who else might, you know. Take on the other roles, and then I could understand how might be a feasible vehicle.
Well, it's such a cool concept too, and there's something that Archie actually says in his Kickstarter video, because there was a bit of this movie that was funded by Kickstarter, which is always mm-hmm. great to see people come through and actually believe in a project like that. But he said he didn't want actors playing rockers, but rockers who could act.
Mm. Well, you know, the three of us didn't necessarily know if we could act.
Right.
But, there are but two in our camp who are real actors and were beforehand, and you have none of them in the room this morning.
Right.
Sorry to say.
We're talking about John Doe and
Lon Wainwright.
You have the amateurs, but I think we all sort of felt, first of all, if somebody asks you to be in a movie, you have to say yes. If Joe Henry is in that movie and is part of it, you additionally have to say yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we all got sort of shamed into, wait a minute, you're gonna consider saying no just because you're scared to do it?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was my daughter who said that, actually.
Right.
She said, you're not really going to say no to this just because you're afraid, are you?
Right.
Called out.
Nailed to the wall.
Called out. So I'm really here just as an example to my children. I have no other expectations.
He is fantastic. He's fantastic. And as he will tell you, time after time, he was voted best thespian of the year two times in a row in high school.
37 years ago. And I parked it right there. I said, I don't want this to go bad. I'm going to put it in the deep freeze, and someday I'll need to take it out.
When he played, when he played Linus in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, he really...
I played him as Lee J. Cobb. I'm sorry, we are a little bit punch drunk.
No. Let's keep that.
You're
going to
clean this all up later. I know you will.
Let's keep that mood going. But I think you all are being modest, obviously. Joe, you've been around movies for a while. Amy, yourself, you've even lately dabbled with Portlandia.
She's in The Big Lebowski.
You are in The Big Lebowski. That's true.
I'm in The Big Lebowski for literally two seconds.
Yeah.
I do it in a different language. And the character is a nihilist, which I interpreted to mean need express zero emotion. Need express no emotion. I think it's a double negative.
It's amazing how many references we kept coming back to Louisville, because this is just a huge Lebowski town on top of it, you know. Mm-hmm. Karen, have you done any acting before this?
Absolutely not. And if you, I don't think college counts. So, you know, there was a little bit of, you know, dabbling.
Hey, I was counting high school a minute.
Yeah, you said counting high school.
Well,
I was in Your Good Man, Charlie Brown, by the way.
Perhaps you might. I might not count mine, but anyway. But no, nothing in front of them.
I did enough to know that I was a terrible actor. And I mean, I really, you know, I did enough to go like, man, acting's hard. I couldn't imagine how anybody did it. And I did a little bit of just sort of improv stuff with, you know, with Fred Armisen mm-hmm. and Carrie in Portlandia. But like, you play yourself. You don't have to memorize lines. And honestly, like, to play the straight man who just looks bewildered and dumb is not, you know, like, that's a lot. It's a lot easier.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith's special Rewind episode with Amy Mann, Joe Henry, and Karen Berquist.
But
like music videos, though. I mean, have you ever done concept music videos? Don't you have to be a character in that?
Acting is pretty low.
Yeah, it's not like memorizing lines and getting into a character, really.
I don't think that's having to embody a character other than your own and be authentic. You know, in that role to other people. I think that's really, really different.
Yeah.
And that was certainly my apprehension is, you know, can I disappear into a character in some way that's, you know, in service to Archie's story?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't completely sure I could. I mean, I have done enough acting way back to think I understand, you know, what needs to happen. I just didn't think that I had the tools to do it necessarily.
Sure.
But, you know... Once John Doe was aboard, he's a really, really old friend and a friend of Amy's as well. And he's really no nonsense, and he's really candid. And he and Amy both came to my house in California when Archie and Dave and a producer and cameraman, Mike Fitzer, came out for a reading. And I said, you know, I'm only going to take this role if John says that I can, because, you know, I'm playing off of him. He's the lead. I'm sort of his sidekick in a way. And I knew that if we did the reading and he didn't think I could actually do it in a credible and, you know, respectful way, that he would tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And
here you are.
And here I am.
Yeah, I gave him plenty of outs. I'm like, look, if this doesn't sound good, feel free to tell me.
You guys are really selling this. Everything about this buildup so far is, don't want to do it. Oh, fine.
Well, I did want to do it. I was looking for a reason to be able to do it.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do it. I mean, quite honestly, you know, all of us have invested a lot in some kind of creative public persona. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to just, you know, walk by and set fire to.
Nobody wants to be Mariah Carey's glitter is what this is coming down to.
So, I mean, honestly, if we're just, you know, if we're being frank, I didn't want to do it if I couldn't be good.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to go out there and embarrass themselves and the project. And I just needed to be convinced that I could hold up my end of things and that, you know, that Archie would be as tough as he needed to be to get what he needed, and then he wouldn't, you know, be shy with any of us. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that he's appreciative that we're here, and I didn't want that to override the fact that, you know, there's a job to do, and it can't be about, you know, are we comfortable right now? And is he uncomfortable, you know, having to say, you know, I need you to do that again and do it different? But I have to say that having both John and Loudon on board, you know, they're real actors. And
so you're able to help each other out.
Well, it's
John,
just that
John's been very helpful.
Sure. To us. But it's just like being in a band with somebody who's really good. It pulls everybody up.
Yeah.
You know, and you if anybody who's in a scene with Loudon, even if you're in the room while a scene's happening, you know, what he does with two words, you know, it's a constant sort of realignment of your thinking of what's possible rather than just thinking, you know, I have to somehow overpower the script with, you know, a big concept of who my character is.
Sure.
You know, he just distills something really quickly and really authentically. And every time I watch him do that, I'm sort of, you know, I get realigned.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a big thing. And Archie's notion of having, you know, musicians who can act versus actors who can play musicians, especially in something that says kind of communal, you know, this is a real sort of an ensemble piece in a way, even though Amy and John's characters are the focal point of the story. It's really hard for musicians to watch people play musicians who aren't really, you know. There are people I could name, and I won't, who have been in films playing, you know, great actors playing
Where's
musicians.
That punch drunk now? That's well, the one I do.
Well, you know, we just don't look, you know, in one, even if in the most subtle way, you know, just burst the bubble for you. And you say, I know that that person has practiced and had a coach, but they are clearly not, you know, a real musician. They don't play that instrument.
Right.
And it really deflates the tires. And I think Archie's, you know, idea that, you know, that part of it has to be authentic or the whole thing will fall down. Mm-hmm. So to try to find people who could stand there and be true to that element of the story and yet still deliver a line when somebody says go.
Wasn't it amazing how hard it is to act naturally?
You know what? I was just talking to Karen about this. The thing that I'm finding, I mean, it's a real indie film. Mm-hmm. It's you know, a bit guerrilla style, and there's so, you know, the hours are so long and there's so little time, you know, like when they're setting up a thing and it's not unlimited takes that you don't really have time to be self-conscious and worry about it. Just like, I'm going to improv. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily know what I'm doing, but here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah. So I think it's been easier. It's a lot easier than I thought. I mean, you know, me and Joe were really, that first scene that we did, we were pretty nervous. But I think we got over that really fast.
Yeah.
A lot of rehearsal before that?
No, not at all. Because I just finished up a record. So I've been like, trying to get that going. And, you know, I mean, everybody else
is
busy on
I've been on
stuff.
Tour.
Yeah, you're
on.
That's the thing. Everybody has a life, you know, that is completely disconnected with acting. And we've got, you know, touring and recording and schedules and families. And so we really just had to find a little chunk of time when we could plow through this thing and make it happen. And
we just jumped in with both feet and hoped for the best.
It's amazing.
Blindfolded.
Yeah. And, you know, you just hope your director is like, you know, look, the director's going to have to look through the camera and tell me how it looks. And if it doesn't look good, you know, I'll do it some other way. But, you know, I mean, my thing, I feel very self-conscious about quote, acting. And, and I just thought, I was like, you know what? I don't have time for that. I don't care. Let's go.
Right, right. And you kind of, you have to trust the people behind the camera, behind the lens, because there's no other.
Yeah, if they say it looks good, then let's.
That's
great.
Like, okay, yeah. Okay.
A big difference, though, I'll say from, you know, there's a lot of things about making a record and making a movie that are, you know, common. Mm-hmm. But there are a couple of key aspects that are really, really different. And the biggest one for me is, you know, I'm a record producer as well, which is analogous to being a film director. I mean, you know, that's the sort of the same job. I don't know why they call it producing, not directing. But but you do something and people are trusting you, and yet you still, you know, offer a playback and people listen and make comments about what they've just done. And everybody needs to be in some kind of agreement that, you know, this is what we meant to do. Now let's move on, as opposed to, you know, acting in a scene. And then you look up and Archie goes, hey, that's great. Let's move on. And it's just like if we were making a record, if I was producing Karen or Amy and they do a take and say, I'm not going to play it back for you, but trust me, it's good. You're going to like your record when you hear it. Yeah. That part of it's really different because you don't have anything to reference except that, you know, I trust Archie. Yeah. And I think at this point I know, you know, when he's just got, you know, that's the best we're going to do versus that's really what I wanted. And I try to read that as best I can and make sure before we move on that, you know, is that, you know, as good as I can do? And is that really as good as you need it to be?
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith's special Rewind episode with Amy Mann, Joe Henry, and Karen Berquist.
It's interesting that you know you're talking about parallels, because, you know, some of the other parallels that go along, the movie is about in a sense collaborations, which is something you're all familiar with and everything. But to have something, to have something when you're thrown in, I mean, it's hard enough to make an organized band succeed. But to have this act, this band, whatever you call it, totally built on chaos, you know, in hopes that something's going to happen. I mean, have you ever actually been in any of those situations?
Well, sometimes
chaos.
I mean, every touring band is kind of like that. I mean, you know, I've been really fascinated recently by the idea of group dynamics and what a weird mystery that is. And and you know, you add in one extra person or substitute one extra person, the whole thing changes. Right. And you really have to, in recording, you know this, Joe, because this is totally your thing, but you have to sense where the group needs to go and allow everybody to go there instead of coming in with a you know, an edict that you're trying to force and, you know, this group to go, you know, to match up with. It's fascinating. I mean, and just being part of the movie with all the players and the people, I mean, it's fascinating to see the group dynamics and, you know, amongst, you know, all of the actors.
But it's also important to note that what's happening in, you know, in real time on the set is germane to the narrative, because, you know, the actors in this case are all musicians and they are coming from really, really different places. Mm-hmm. And they are actually, you know, we're asking them to really play the music. You know, it's not being created by someone, you know, somewhere else. And then, you know, we're lip syncing to it or anything. The music that's happening in the movie is actually having to happen in our real little universe here, you know, as it does in the story. You know, we've had to, you know, try to find a way for us all to play together in some way that is musical. And it's not just about, you know, what I would personally like to hear if I was, you know, playing myself in real life and trying to direct, you know, a moment in a studio like this, because the song is a character in the story. And what it becomes has to, you know, have some kind of integrity that's rooted in the narrative. It's not just about what I want to hear.
Sure.
It's like, does this sound like what these people would sound like when they got there? You know?
So in a very meta sort of way, I mean, you guys are living the real
really
story
is,
in this. I mean, the whole thing is the real story.
It's unfolding before our very eyes.
Because they're players with varying degrees of styles and ability, and it is kind of fascinating to see, and, you know, Joe's sort of directing this too as the producer. But, you know, what is its best self that the group can be with these weird elements and sometimes very strange instrumentation too.
And when, you know, I was talking with Karen this morning about a vocal she did on a song the other day about the fact that, you know, I'm not saying that her performance was too good for the character, but it's accomplished in a way that is different than the character, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And I bring that up to say that's sort of what we're wrestling with constantly is, you know, is that what that character would sound like? Mm-hmm. You know, not what is Karen capable of, mm-hmm. but, you know, how can she believably embody, you know, where that character is, you know, along the arc of the story? Mm-hmm. And it's a tricky thing to cut loose some part of your own sensibility, because mm-hmm. we're all trained mm-hmm. to say, this is what I mean and this is how mm-hmm. what I need to get there, versus, well, this is where I would go mm-hmm. if, you know, if I was producing Karen Burke was singing this song, mm-hmm. well, you know, I would approach it really, really differently sure. mm-hmm. than, you know, how do I approach the character that she's playing mm-hmm. and how would she, you know, mount a song if she mm-hmm. had to?
Mm-hmm. It's really hard to let go of, you know, years and years of what you have learned works for you and what you think you should do and the hours that you've put in, and just sort of set that aside and approach it as you know, the novice character that you think mm-hmm. how you think your character would. It's that's difficult.
You know? Yeah, I don't envy you that. You know, like to set aside any part of being as great as you are to say, like, aww. What would Rita the lounge singer, who maybe has not had the experience and maybe doesn't, yeah. To, you know, and then to know that maybe you're not going to sound exactly as great as you are. I don't know if I could do that.
I paid you to say that. Thank you.
No, I'm just imagining that scene. Joe's saying, Karen, you sound lovely. Could you please turn the suck button up just a little
yeah.
bit?
Could you sing a little more out of tune? Maybe, yeah.
Well, I brought it up this morning because there's a part of Karen's voice that I know really well that I think, you know, that's something that's completely unique to her mm-hmm. singular voice mm-hmm. and I hear it in moments and say to me mm-hmm. that gives away a little bit that mm-hmm. you know, you have a finesse, you've developed a finesse that's your own, that mm-hmm. this character, you know, hasn't had that kind of experience to have gotten there mm-hmm. as a singular performer. Making records is just as phony as making movies. Yeah. And I mean that in the best possible way.
It
is all,
sure.
Yeah. It is all theater.
Who wouldn't take that as a compliment?
You know, when you're sitting in a studio and somebody says, look, I just want to keep it real. I go, well, you know, leave my house, because there's nothing about this that's real.
Yeah.
You know, that $10,000 microphone in front of you is not you keeping it real.
Yeah.
You know, that's us trying to create an illusion of mm-hmm. some kind of, you know, mm-hmm. Sonic landscape, you know, on which the song might actually, you know, mm-hmm. the story of the song is going to take place.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a part of what we do day to day as musicians that is about illusion, in the same way that making a film is about illusion. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't care about the truth. People just want to be seduced. You know,
when it connects.
First among them. You know, mm-hmm. I don't care anything about truth. As far as like artistic sure. truth, I want to be seduced.
But you want to be seduced by something that has the ring of truth. That
I want to be seduced by something that I believe is true.
Yeah, that's a Bob Dylan line he just said about
this is very, very meta. But I mean, I agree with you. But I also think, I mean, making a record is stitching together moments of the true and real. It's, you know, I mean, they're degrees.
The songwriting.
I mean, it's sort of like the movie Social Network, which is virtually fictional, but there's a true thing in it that's not about like what really happened, but about, you know, it rings true. You know, it rings true. The dynamics all ring true. The story rings true in a way that is more impactful, probably, than, you know, that what actually went down.
Yeah, maybe I sounded flip when I said that. I didn't mean to, because when I say that we're trying to, you know, that it's staged just as much as any film. I mean, I think sometimes you have to just sort of disappear into an idea, and it's not really about anybody's, you know, true reality. I mean, we're all referencing it. Anybody playing a role in a movie is still using, you know, I mean, your body is your instrument. It's your vehicle. It's the tool that you have. And yet you're still trying to, you know, create an illusion. Even if you've written a song that is based in, you know, a real moment of your life, there's a certain point when you're writing it, I believe, and of course we all have different philosophies about how we get there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there is a real part of it for me as a songwriter that really is about disappearing into it. You know, I don't write a song to serve myself as a artistic persona. Mm-hmm. You know, my deepest desire is to write a song that is persuasive enough that I, Joe Henry, could disappear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, period.
Well, now, it's interesting you put it that way, too, because all three of you have had, well, extremely great careers and very interesting careers. You know, all the paths you've taken, the control you have, all three of you, over your own career. You've tasted little bits of stardom.
Tiny morsels.
What do we call it?
Yeah.
At this point, and with
Stardust.
The control you have, though, is that ever...
The dust. Glitter.
Because this goes back to the John Doe character.
Deep
the John Doe character
glitter.
Is trying to do a comeback. Mm-hmm. So it is that something, you know?
Yeah.
His character wants to do a comeback. You guys have, you know, whatever it's been, you've been there. Mm-hmm. Is that a thing? Mm-hmm. Is that when you're doing this, when you're talking about, you know, writing the song to disappear into, to connect, you know, someone else is going to take that run away with it. But is it ever to be in that height of things again?
What so, are we aspirational to a fame?
It really is that
thing?
Kind of question, right? Yeah,
I think it's dangerous to set your sights on that.
Yeah,
and I'm not copping out. I think for me personally, my sights need to be set on discovery, and that's why I write. I write to discover. And if I just put my head down and focus on the work, that's a good place for me to live. Yep. If I start, you know, putting my head up in the clouds and looking around and wondering what if, I lose sight of all the wonderful things that I have within my reach. So I'm really not copping out, but I really do believe that.
That's
but
beautiful.
It's taken me 45 years to get there.
Yeah, I think that's the absolutely. And even you know, even... in smaller ways, like how, you know, or is some, you know, is somebody going to like this song, or, you know, suppose my friend hears this and thinks it's about, you know, like any, the second you start thinking outside what is in front of you, you wander off the path. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yes, for me, I can't think about this. I don't even know what fame means anymore. And in terms of what, you know, like as indie musicians, what we're doing, I mean, you know, do you really want to be on the, you know, the MTV Music Awards? I mean,
no.
My God, like,
I know.
Like to have to worry about that.
It'd be great if all three of you were on
honestly,
the MTV Music
Awards. I can't think of a bigger nightmare at this point. Like, you know, I'm just happy. Like, there's, you know, there's always like the next thing to do. Like, what's the next thing to do? To make a record, to write a song.
Yeah.
Somebody calls you and says, do you want to be in a movie? I mean, you just say yes. You say yes to stuff, and there's always going to be things to say yes to. Well, like, you know, God willing.
Well, when you get asked to do something that's, I mean, aside from just getting up in the morning and just trying to write whatever song might, you know, offer itself, you know, in your path, you know, anytime I've been called to work on a song for a movie or produce something for a film, even if you do it and it doesn't get used, you know, you still do something you would have never done otherwise, and which is what's great about any kind of, you know, collaboration. You're asked to co-write with somebody or be in a movie like this. You know, you're being invited to engage in a way that you wouldn't have on your own, and none of that's wasted. But as far as your question about, you know, fame and popularity and such, I mean, there's a real part of that. I mean, look, we've all been asked, if you're doing this professionally, to learn to value what you're doing by how many people are paying to hear it and how many people are showing up. And I'm just going to tell you that, you know, I've been seduced by that and demoralized by it as much as anybody. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you also that, you know, that's death to an artist.
Mm-hmm.
That notion that, you know, what I'm doing has value only in as much as people immediately respond to it, you know, you're finished.
Mm-hmm.
If I find myself writing a song and thinking about how anybody's going to react to it, you know, whether it's an imagined audience or my wife or my manager or my son or my brother, I'm done for the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're finished if you are already imagining how this is going to be received, because it's just become vanity at that point.
And you're already in the result, which you have no control over.
No.
So you're already worrying and putting your energy into the part that you have zero control over instead of the part you have control over, which is finishing your song.
We do not sit on the results committee.
Yeah.
Nobody does.
Yeah.
And might I say that's really a great thing about the big crash of the record industry, if I may, that especially for people, you know, more like us than if you were sitting here talking to Sting, though why would you be talking to Sting? What I mean is that you know, there was a moment, you know, in the past when, you know, so-called AAA radio was supposed to be offering, you know, a slightly, you know, unguarded door left partially ajar for people like us. You know, only one of us, though. Not all three of us would be allowed to walk through.
No,
you know, because there's only so much room in the lifeboat.
Yep.
But, you know, the idea that that we all had to, we were all asked at some point to say, you know, hey, I love your record, but is there anything we can go to radio with? And at the point when it became as obvious to the rest of the industry as it was always obvious to me, that I didn't really have a relationship to radio, stations like yours notwithstanding, because
Thank you
guys have been tremendously supportive.
Yeah.
And I would say that even if I wasn't sitting here in your town. But I'm saying, as a rule, you know, as soon as we didn't even have to pretend that a radio station was going to, you know, play a song of mine, I'd just speak for myself. And then if I gave it to them and it was a little bit faster and a little less sad ass, and if it was 3 minutes long instead of 9 minutes long, that they would actually play my records. Once I was able to stop, aware that people were not going to ask me to pretend that was true, then I was completely liberated.
Yeah.
Like, you know, great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that never really existed for me anyway. Mm-hmm. So let's stop pretending like it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now
yeah,
I can go do my work.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as that, you know, one extra voice disappears from your head, mm-hmm, you know, that's some real clutter that's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because that is not a,
picks up a lot
that
of
voice is not
that little voice
is not your friend when you're trying to create something.
No, you put it in a mason jar and screw the lid on and put it on the shelf.
Yeah,
and leave
absolutely.
It there.
And it is amazing how infectious that can be, even if you don't care about it or try to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just and I was a little surprised because I went through, we talked about this before, but I went through a thing last year where I had someone close to me saying, like, you know, I really hope your next record's going to be really different than your other records. And you know, I mean, I thought I was a person who was like, you know, I can shine on the opinions and the thoughts and, you know, desires of other people in, you know, in my work. But, you know, I mean, of course, you're writing a song, you're like, oh, I'm really liking this song. I wonder if it's different. Is it different?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it feels, I think it's different, but is it different enough? What does different even mean? There's a lot of directions you can go in different.
Yeah.
Okay, does that mean like more sort of weird and indie? Oh, well, maybe different means, and it can just drive yourself crazy.
Yeah.
You know, as a person who's very close to me and whose opinion I valued.
Yeah.
And,
sure.
You know, and I mean, I could not believe that I was having these thoughts, and it was really hard to get out of that because, you know, suddenly you're looking at yourself through somebody else's eyes.
Right.
And then once you do that, oh, my God,
it's impossible.
Just
yeah.
That's
yeah.
impossible. Was this person from the Midwest by chance? Because when we say different back here, pal, you know what it means.
Yeah.
It means we don't understand that.
We don't understand.
No, but
that's different.
They thought, you know, their opinion is that they thought I should go into some other different, in a different direction.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know what, you know.
Well, what does that even mean?
I was intending that this record would sound different than the last one, but
yeah,
you know, what does that mean? It sounds different to me, but maybe not to you. You know, I mean, you just maybe this is different in a bad way.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Yeah,
it's crazy.
You
maker.
Can see. Okay. I've also had too much coffee at this point.
No, but you know, I completely hear you because you know, as soon as you're thinking about you know what else it should be than what you would normally. You know, than where you would go creatively on your own, you know, listening to your own voice and following it, you know, you're not in that same creative mode anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to adopt somebody else's on your behalf.
Yeah, you're
and you
trying
can't
to think of
it.
Somebody else's brain.
But I think the real, you know, one of the real beauties of being able to last long enough, you know, I had this talk with Michelle and DeGhiacciolo a few times where we were talking about Duke Ellington and the fact that some of my favorite music that he wrote was towards the end of his life. And you think, you know, in our racket, and it's harder all the time, you know, how do you sort of trick people into continuing to patronize you long enough to where you might actually get good at what you do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm 51 and I've made a dozen records of my own, and I've worked on lots of other records, and I think I'm only now just getting to the point where I think I know what good might look like for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And there's a part of it we just say, you know, I'm old enough. I don't have to be all things to all people.
Mm-mm.
You know, you want to hear something,
right,
you know, more up tempo? Go put
preach
something
it.
Else on. There's
yeah.
a lot of
preach
things.
It.
But
agreed.
There was a point when people would say, "I love your record. We need another upbeat song."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
let,
I just
let
think,
them write it. Then.
That just doesn't.
That's right.
You know, I've liberated myself from that concern.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I just think, you know, I don't care if the whole record's slow and in the key of D. It, you know, is it engaging to me? Do I keep wanting to go back? Does it tell the story? Is it the movie I wanted it to be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a full statement.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think, it's really hard to get there unless you've been doing it long enough where you realize that all those kind of opinions, like mm-hmm. Amy just described, are completely beside the point. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to hear that truth, you know, when you're younger and you're surrounded by people that you depend on, and you're like, only by the grace of this label or this publisher am I allowed to work. Sure. But, you know, in equal measure to the crash of the industry, you know, as we knew it, which I'm happy about it. It needed to happen. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's being met by mm-hmm. a shift in technology that allows, you know, people to do all kind of work, you know, sitting in their apartment, sitting in their basement, you know, sure. wherever, who are not beholden to a record label to say, we are now going to give you a small amount of money to allow you to go do what you do. You know, you don't have to ask anybody's permission to go, you know, do what you do. And I love the idea of more and more artists being able to create something and then go to a label as an example and say, not here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I have done. Do you want to be involved?
Right.
And you're not offering them a master pass key, you know, into your work. It's like, yeah, we want to do it, but we want to hook you up with this producer. Though, you guys turn your headsets off for a second. everybody needs a producer. You can't just go around by yourself making records in your basement without somebody guiding you. But anyway, for the young people out there who
just
might
made
be,
himself irrelevant.
It's really important that, you know, people are able to work, you know, without having to ask anybody's permission to mm-hmm. do it. Mm-hmm. And that's been the big shift that people don't talk about mm-hmm. when they talk about the great crash. Mm-hmm. You know, because what that really means, the great crash, is that people are, you know, hopefully not allowed to just live, you know, off of this crazy excess that just digs a bigger hole for everybody. Mm-hmm. And then what would look like a success, you know, in a reasonable world looks like failure. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's something mm-hmm. T-Bone Burnett told me right. a long time ago. You know, Joe, yeah. you let people spend money on your behalf like this, even though when you're young, you think that means it's indicative of how much they believe in you. But they're just digging a hole that you may never climb out of. Mm-hmm.
They're just trying to keep their own jobs.
A new band that mm-hmm. sells 100,000 records, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. everybody ought to be popping champagne corks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if the label has spent, mm-hmm. you know, $3 million to make and market that record,
yeah.
you know, at the bottom of the printout sheet, you know, you just look like a disaster,
yeah.
and you're finished as far as that label's concerned. We've all seen it happen to people
oh, yeah.
that we know and love,
mm-hmm. oh, yeah.
whose work didn't diminish, mm-hmm. but the perception of the work diminished because
yeah.
you know mm-hmm. the false stakes of the game were how they decided to determine success and failure.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I'm glad
you're
all.
Sorry to go on and on.
You know, you're fine. I'm glad you all have stuck it out the way you did. I'm extremely thankful for all the music you've done, and more importantly, the way you've done it, because it really is noticeable out of here.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
The movie, Pleased to Meet Me. You're working on it. There's obviously, I'm guessing, no release date or anything like that, but we're going to keep our ear to the ground on all of that, and I'm expecting a heck of a soundtrack too. So,
well, that's being talked about as well. I think that's part of Archie's master plan mm-hmm. is that Karen and Amy and I and John and Loudon will somehow do something once the movie is wrapped mm-hmm. that will be a companion piece, but hopefully also mm-hmm. you know exist on its own as a musical work mm-hmm. of integrity of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Well, thank you all so much.
Thank you. Thanks
Kyle.
To the station for having us.
There you go. My thanks again to Amy Mann, Joe Henry, Karen Berquist, and to you for checking out the episode and the series. Hit that subscribe button if you're not already before you get out of here so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give the series a rating and leave a review wherever you're listening from. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. where I do a show Monday through Friday starting 6 p.m. Eastern, 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news. One of my recent shows features some classics and favorites from Neil Young, Ike and Tina, Julian Lennon, Beck, Garbage, The Pretenders, Robert Francis, Saint Seneca, Abibio Sound Machine, Green Day, Tyler Ballgame, Bob Seger, John Hyatt, and my interviews with Kiefer Sutherland, Kevin Bacon, and Jared Leto.
That's what you get when you tune in weeknights starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. Please do like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
The Omaha Steaks End of Season Sale is here to deliver everything you crave to reset after the holidays. From handcrafted USDA certified tender steaks to gourmet burgers, versatile chicken and pork, and more. You know exactly what you're getting. Premium lean protein that everyone loves. Visit OmahaSteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their end-of-season sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code AUDIO at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.